Welcome to the Human Advisor Podcast. This series is brought to you by Altruist, the first ever fully integrated digital brokerage platform for fiduciary financial advisors. No commissions, no fees, and no biases. The way it should be. Check out humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. Now let's get into today's episode.
Goes back to what my dad said, which is, son, there's no time card in this business. Right. Like, you're never punching in and punching out. And when you, again, it's one of those things where, like, when you're younger, you're like, whatever. And now it's like, I get it.
All right. Welcome to a special edition of the Human Advisor Podcast. I get to interview my friend today, Douglas A. Bonaparte. What's the A for? Let's get to that right away. Adam. Douglas Adam Bonaparte joins me today. We are live here in his office, as you can see. Logo game on a million. Thank you for having me, sir.
This is going to be fun.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. I would tell you guys right away, if you get only a quarter of our group chat conversation, this would be really, really good. Wow, man. I mean, we got the coffee.
We got coffee.
Right. We got the book here. We're going to get into all of that. So many ways we can go with the conversation. I mean,
I'm excited.
So let's just do this. Let's just start from the beginning, man. I mean, we were just talking about it off camera, like, what makes you you, right? But let's go back to the beginning, where you were born and,
Sure.
You know, how you ended up in Jersey down the road from me. Let's talk about all that.
I'm literally like 2 miles down the street.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So I was born in New York. And my parents are New Yorkers. My mom's from Yonkers. My dad's from Harrison. I mean, true New Yorkers.
Right.
And moved down to South Florida when I was two.
Right.
So I grew up in South Florida in sunshine and happiness, warm climate.
Right,
you know,
right.
my blood is permanently thin. Fall and winter scare me to this day. But I grew up down there, have an older brother, had a great childhood.
Okay.
Really love South Florida.
Define great for me. What's a great childhood?
I was showered with love. I was never really for want.
Right.
We grew up in Boca Raton, Florida, which
doesn't suck.
Yeah, which is an affluent community.
Okay.
And, you know, I think one of the things interesting about Boca is you're surrounded by a lot of wealth down there, and that's a lot of retired wealth, ironically, from New York City.
Right.
We call it two nicknames, the Sixth Borough and God's Waiting Room. And growing up there was interesting, you know, it was basically around everyone's grandparents all the time. And that would serve a role in terms of what I would ultimately become as a financial advisor.
Right.
But it was a great time. I had lots of friends. My mom's a school teacher and will retire after 35 years of being Palm Beach County school teacher. I'm really proud of her. And my dad has always been an entrepreneur, has always ran businesses, and I'm a second generation CFP. So he's still 30 years plus now. Has been a financial advisor.
Okay.
And taught me everything I know about being an advisor, how to run a practice. So that was one of kind of the best advantages I ever had, was someone, you know, teaching me this stuff or teaching me how to be business savvy, always encouraging. You know, if there was anything I ever wanted, and I said, you know, I'm not for want. If there was anything I ever wanted, I remember my dad would make me show him why, you know, I should have whatever it is, almost to like the point of put a pitch together.
Right.
Know, explain what you're going to do to justify this cost. And it always was, what kind of work are you going to do to get this thing?
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I remember maybe it was early in high school or late middle school when like CD burners came out.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Yeah,
remember
the
CDR came out. We always had access to computers and technology. It was another area that, you know, his father, Shepard, was one of the only grandpas I know that could use a PC.
Right.
Like, my brother was captivated by that.
Right.
I just wanted to play video games.
Right. Your brother older or younger?
Older. David's 2 years older.
Okay.
And we were being introduced to technology at a young age. We were being introduced to entrepreneurship at a young age. Mm-hmm. Anyways, back to that CDR. I remember when it came out, I wanted one so bad. And I literally put a PowerPoint presentation together of how I was going to, you know, make money with a CDR drive,
right.
you know, and sell and obviously bootleg copies right. to all right. my friends, you right. know, pick 10 songs. This was Napster, right? So right. pick 10 songs and take $10 and you could have yourself a mixtape.
Right.
So we were always kind of like hustling and learning things to do. My brother was much more clean than I was. He was right. fixing computers for oh, people wow. in the neighborhood and stuff like that. So it was a really cool childhood in that, again, very pleasant. My parents were together. They would actually get divorced 3 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so we can get into that. But yeah. when I say I had a nice childhood, I really did.
Right.
I really did.
And did you always want to do this because your dad did it? Or was there something where you like you were going to be the point guard for the Knicks or something? Like, what was your what'd you want to be when you were younger?
An architect.
Okay.
Yeah, I loved drawing houses and structures and stuff like that.
Okay.
My parents thought I'd be an attorney because okay. I wouldn't shut up.
Yeah. Right.
Thought I'd be great at that.
Knowing you now, well, yeah.
I married one.
Yeah. Right.
But that was it. I think like architect was that thing.
Really?
And then probably in college, I figured out it actually involved a lot of math and science. And,
right.
I don't know. No, I did not want to be a financial advisor, despite being exposed to it from an early age.
Right. So again, so I love this because you mentioned the entrepreneurial piece, right? You're an entrepreneur now, right? You mentioned the financial advisor piece. Your dad was your financial advisor now. So I don't want to jump into the firm right away, but
yeah.
you know, Bonafide Wealth, obviously you've created a tremendous brand around that. You bring a lot of yourself, right, to your practice, as we all do. But talk about the road here. We do offline a yeah. lot, right? And again, and explain the firm a little bit, but I think
sure.
as I want everyone to do is there's a lot that goes into having a logo like that, right? It's not just, you know, coming up with something,
right.
you know, that looks good. But talk about your path here
yeah.
and ultimately what you had to overcome to have your own firm.
Yeah, so I probably was very lost even going into college as far as, like, knowing what I wanted to do. I think it's somewhat very classic for people to go off to school and they think they want to do something. They have no idea.
Yeah,
you have
zero.
Zero clue. And I think that parents and institutions don't do necessarily a great job of helping people find out what they're passionate about
right.
and letting them know it's okay to go pursue that.
Like, right.
I feel in that regard, I got a little lucky here that, you know, this role lent itself very well to things I'm good at.
Right.
Talking,
right.
whether it be, and yes, we do sell, selling yourself,
right.
right? Marketing, creativity, all of these things that I was particularly good at could come together here. But I kind of got lucky with that.
Okay.
And it wasn't until my father, I guess, was terrified of what was going to become of his son in college. Like,
right.
oh my God. And I was partying. I was having a lot of fun.
US.
I went to Florida during the Tim Tebow years.
Yes.
I mean, every day was literally a party. I mean, we did some learning too. But, you know, we caught three national championships back to back to back.
Right.
Those are my last three semesters of college, if that
oh
sets
my
the
goodness.
Tone for, like, what was going on around us. And
right.
I already grew up in Florida. All your friends from high school were there.
Right.
I mean, you're around people that you already knew, that you already had fun with, now having even more fun.
Right.
And my dad always kind of the worry wart for his kids and making sure they're okay out of love, fear, all of that. One, you know, the first summer after my freshman year said, you know, what are you doing? And this, not in life, but what are you doing this
yeah,
summer?
Yeah, yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I said, you know, I think I'm just going to stick around school. A, it was a lot of fun. And B,
right.
there was still credits. So, you know, I thought to take classes and stuff. And he says, well, you know, why don't you come home and, you know, see if you actually know. He said, why don't, you know, you go to this conference that was like a financial advisor conference and check it out and tell me what you think. It was all a trap. Because when I came home from that conference, on my bed was a Series 7 manual.
Really?
Yeah. And he says, see if you can knock this out before you go back halfway through summer to do more classes. And
right.
I thought it was a pretty good deal, like lay out at the pool, read a book. I was already studying. I was already in student mode.
Right.
All I got to do is pass a test. And, you know, I had no clue what I was looking at, you
right.
know. And I'd pass it. I'd right. go back for my sophomore year as a registered representative.
Oh, wow. So you got your Series 7 in college?
At 19.
Wow.
Yeah. So that was kind of the foot in the door. you know, that my father gave me. And he viewed that as an opportunity to, like, double, triple down. And he then had a plan for me. I had no plan for me, but he sure did.
Right.
And I more or less, out of, again, just being young and blind to a lot, the only thing I really had then was Heather, my wife. I mean, we were together throughout this, and she saw all of this.
Right. Shout to Heather, by the way.
Hey. she was, to this day, guiding me.
Right.
You know, from 19 to now 35. And you know she's the secret weapon.
100%.
A lot of you know it. It's true.
If not, you will.
Yeah. But she was watching all of this happen. And ultimately, I just kept going down the path that my dad was setting there. For him, it was join the family practice. He would leave a legacy. I would have something I could do for a living. But it was all predicated on being in Florida. And when I would graduate from college, I had racked up about 3.5, almost 4 years of actual experience, fully licensed. My last 3 credits in undergrad were my first 3 credits of the first course of the CFP.
Wow.
So I was on the fast track. And to this day, I'm very grateful for the opportunities that he gave, not just in, like, the upbringing, but, you know, he didn't pass those exams for me. He kept showing me a way into being productive. And again, a little bit of luck here. I liked it. Right. I liked learning about how operations of the business work. I liked learning how financial planning worked. I liked that he was helping clients achieve their goals. I liked being in the room while he spoke with clients. All of that was very appealing to me. The only part that sucked was working with my dad.
Right. Now I was about to go there.
Yeah, we
right.
can go there. And we have open conversations about this. It was just a very toxic thing once I had graduated from college.
Okay.
And here I am with having amassed all of this experience, knowing that this is probably what I should pursue. But my heart, Heather, was in New York City going through law school. And this is now, you know, months before the sky would fall from the recession.
Right.
And it got pretty bad as far as the toxic environment that I had with my father in working together. The last thing you want to do is, you know, graduate from school. Last thing any 20-something, young 20-something-year-old wants to do is graduate from school, move back home.
Right.
And not just move back home. That's one thing. But it's move back home and work for, you know, a parent. It was just absolutely brutal. We couldn't manage that very well. And it was our undoing in working together.
Wow.
But with enough love in his heart, he realized that, you know, this is going to go start moving us both backwards pretty quickly.
Right.
And suggested that perhaps I would like to check out job opportunities in New York City.
Right.
You know, he wasn't dumb to the fact that, you know, my heart and eyes were set north. And instead of taking the time that he gave me to think about it, I told him right there on the spot, you know, I'll go find a place to take these skills.
Wow.
And get a job in New York City. And it was kind of like on that day, the whole dynamic changed, right? Everything changed at that point.
In a good way.
In our relationship, I think...
Or just in a relief way.
Well, I think it's multifaceted. I think it was the first time I made a definitive decision and took control of my life, right? And stepped out from the shelter that I was in for all of it.
Right.
Right? And you know... made a claim as to what I would want to do and who I would want to be.
Right.
And I think that it was a huge step back in father-son relationship that was necessary to ever see us moving forward again.
Wow.
So while, you know, scorched earth for many years after that, it would be a slow rebuild.
Right.
Many steps backwards, but ultimately steps forward. And we've talked about a lot of that personally over the years. And that's how I got to New York City.
Right.
You know, it wasn't, all right, well, son, you know, glad I trained you up.
Right.
Off you go.
Pat you on the butt.
A lot of screaming.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. So it's not true what the trolls say on Twitter that he's only who he is because he inherited his daddy's book and his daddy did everything for him.
No, I moved up here with $5,000 in debt. That was not my student loans. So I tack on student loans, tens of thousands of dollars in debt, had to get rid of my car.
There
I remember driving it to CarMax and they're like, you owe us $3,000 to get rid of it. And I asked my mom for the money and I borrowed it from her and I paid her back as soon as I, you know, could when I got to New York. I showed up to a random Craigslist roommate's apartment that Heather had helped me scope out to make sure I wasn't going to get murdered at night. When I landed, I found 4 boxes that I had packed and shipped up to the apartment. And the first thing I did was go to a mattress store to buy a mattress.
All right. See this? And that's, man, that's what I'm talking about, is that, again, you've built an incredible practice, an incredible brand, but that's what this is all about, like that story, right? And I think we don't get there enough with people. And again, I knew some of that, but just to hear all of that, and we'll get into Twitter and that whole thing.
Yeah.
But it's like, when you really know, when you really get into what people have been through, again, that's why I'm so defensive of you and just all of us in general, because, and at least for me personally, what we bring to this profession and what we bring to our clients, and more importantly, what we bring to the world, is a lot of struggle and personal turmoil and all these other things. And just imagine, right, coming into this business from someone who gave you life.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Right? Who you love and look up to, and then ultimately it's like, okay, I gotta separate myself from that.
Yeah.
And start all over again, right? So to this day, like, is that something that you still think about as you start to build your practice, and obviously being a dad now, like, do you think about that?
A lot of it in a put a smirk on your face, full circle, like,
yeah,
comes full circle, or you'll hear something your father or mother said to you that, you know, as a kid or a teenager, you were like, something that really just, you know, was a trite expression, or yeah, and then you say it yourself,
right,
you know, in your 30 to your own child, or
right,
you hear that lesson you wanted to rebel against, you know, come front and center of your own mind, and
yeah,
you start to really appreciate what they were trying to tell you
right
then. And it's a humbling experience. But yeah, I mean, listen, I, in the beginning of my career, would worry that maybe people would have that take, like, you know, a parent gave him everything. That's
right.
That's, oh, he got that early start. Yeah. Listen, yeah.
Like, exactly.
Yeah. Through my father's own fear of his child becoming a failure and partying too hard or having too much fun,
right,
he forced knowledge and drive down my throat.
Right.
You know, and it was very unpleasant at the time, and it robbed me of thinking for myself for many years.
Right.
You know, very Machiavellian to say, well, ends justify the means here.
Right.
Look, I look back, it's all part of the story. I don't think the story exists without having gone through that experience.
Right.
You know, and I don't want anyone to be like, oh, whoa, is this guy for, you know, getting all of this knowledge, all of this experience, and being able to, you know, come up to New York City. But at the same time, coming up here with less than nothing, and you have to make it work.
Right.
Now, granted, my worst case scenario, which I thought was going to happen within like 2 months of arriving here, because that's when the recession started, like, I think
right,
Lehman collapsed. So here's the next level to the story. I think Lehman collapsed like when I got off the plane at JFK.
Wow.
So I'm coming up to New York City to work in personal finance, or in finance.
Right, right.
Finance. Right. And, you know, what do I know? The entire, like, U.S. economy is, like, collapsing before my eyes. I literally thought I was going home, like,
right,
in Fort. Like, Doug, you really know how to pick it. Like,
right.
this is great timing. And there's a lot that then goes in after that. But, you know, it was brick by brick from that moment forward. And in the face of what we would experience, and that just now goes into, like, the book and what the mission is.
Yeah.
We would experience is being 24.
Right.
And going into pretty much an economy that's imploding.
Right.
And taking a look at least my friends and my peers, and watching absolute devastation take place as far as what our future outlook would be.
Right.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Didn't matter if you were well-to-do or not, if you educated yourself and bought into the promise that education would provide you with a career or income to build a life for yourself, and now it's, you know, being ripped away from you from
right,
day one.
Right.
That's scary.
Right.
And as much as it was exciting to move here at 24, and my first New York was an amazing, you know, first few years in the city, I was literally scared out of my mind.
Right.
You know, again, thinking I could go home. And yeah, go home to sunny South Florida to a family that, you know, it wasn't good.
How close were you to doing that? Like, was there ever a day where you're like, screw this, I'm throwing my hands up, I'm out?
Never.
Really?
Never. Failure was not an option. one way or the other, you know, I always never lacked confidence. Mm-hmm. You know, that was something, and you know, kind of fine line between that and ego.
Right.
But I, to this day, no matter what happens, am confident that I could provide, whether it's for me and my family or for whoever I'm responsible for. Maybe that's just like the sales person in me. We always feel like,
right,
you know, give me something I can sell and I'll get it done. I always, right, thought that I could do that. So I never thought like I would, the only way I'd be going home is if like the wheels really came off.
Right.
Right. And there wasn't someone that needed me for the skill set that I had. But quite frankly, you know, I was needed more than ever as, right, far as the advisors that I was supporting at the time.
Right. Right. Right.
Wow. Yeah. I mean, so many ways to go with this. And before we pivot, because I have a really hard left we're about to take. But before we do that, I want to ask you this. I look at you, Justin. I mean, hell, Josh. A lot. You know, Michael Batnick. A lot. So many folks who share their family, yeah, right? And being family men in this business. And again, I think one of the things that this job affords you is a little bit of flexibility, right? To take days off, the kids at the doctor,
yeah,
things like that.
Nothing beats it.
Right. It, just what I'm saying. It's hard. I try and explain that to people all the time. Again, I don't have a family, but again, if there's anything that my family needs or whatever, and you need, yeah, you got to take a day or 2 days or a week or whatever. But at the same time, right? There's really no
huge luxury.
Right. Huge luxury
to this job.
So two things. One, talk a little bit about how you balance, right? You have I don't want to say prototypical, but you know, a millennial, you're growing, yep, a family, right? Your family's growing, your business is
older,
growing.
And everything. Older millennial.
Older millennial. Yeah. Well, 35? The, yeah, oldest or what?
38.
All right, yeah, yeah.
You can be like 24.
You're still young. Yeah, as old goats. But you know, so everything around you is growing now. Mm-hmm. And that comes with a whole lot of responsibility,
right?
Right? Brand, business, family,
yeah,
right? And the second part of that is what you may feel as though is your responsibility to your clients, right? And going out there. And again, we've had many talks about this personally, but talk a little bit about, one, how do you manage that? Right? And I've been on calls with you where you kind of like, you know what I mean? All hands are being,
yeah,
used.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And also just a little bit of an advice. And I know you love speaking to this demographic,
yeah,
right? To any young advisor out there, male or female, sure, right? No matter where they are, about how to manage it, right? And some tips on what you found is working, not working, being able to leverage, again, the resources that we have.
Yeah.
In this business.
So to your point about, you know, when you own your own business and it's a service business, like, you know, helping, being a financial advisor or a financial planner, you do have that luxury of having tremendous flexibility in your schedule and work life. But it goes back to something my father told me. And again, I had a great, you know, view of what this was going to look like by watching him do it for 15, 20 years.
Right,
so
right.
He set the tone. He was always at my games, dropping me off at school. I lived the parent.
Volleyball, right?
Well, yeah, volleyball in high school. Yeah, but yeah, you're a kid, you're playing like all the sports, whether, yeah, you're good or bad. And I was pretty much unilaterally bad at all of them, except volleyball, apparently.
Right.
Yeah, I was definitely playing outfield.
Right.
The best position I ever got was being a forward in basketball because, right, I was tall enough to like have a decent role.
Right.
I just fall on the floor. Grandpa would say like, why you keep falling on the ground? Long story. So you have to keep in mind that the tone was set by my dad, who was a very active participant in his son's lives.
Okay.
He was always around. I never, you know, yeah, he'd work late meetings. I remember times he'd come home really late. But he showed me that you could have balance. I guess that's very atypical, right? When,
yeah,
you have, like, a white-collar professional parent, you know, mm, that could be working all hours of the day. And the funny thing is, he worked his ass off.
Right.
Like, he built his practice from zero.
Right.
And ironically, I would reject inheriting anything as far as his business to do the same thing he just did. He's probably thinking to himself, why make it harder on yourself? And ironically, the example was set from him. So not just with, like, how do you balance it? Like, it's really the only thing I ever saw. I don't know the other side of that.
Right.
You know, I don't know I'm going to wake up at 5 and come home at 10 next day. For me, it's pretty much working all the time. I don't have like definitive marks.
Right.
I just don't view it that way. It's very fluid. And it goes back to what my dad said, which is, son, there's no time card in this business.
Right.
Like, you're never punching in and punching out. And when you, again, there's one of those things where like when you're younger, you're like, whatever. And now it's like, I get it.
Right.
I get it. Like, I could be on the couch watching TV if a softball question comes my way. You know, picture this, Doug in his underwear watching some show on Sunday night. You're welcome. And I get this softball question from a client who needs an answer. Like, if I can answer it, that phone like lets me do it right then and there.
Right.
They think I'm a dynamo
right.
for answering yep. at 9 o'clock on a Sunday.
Right.
My pleasure. No problem. That's right. why I'm here. The phone's in my hand. Like, you're not bothering me at all. Like, my wife's probably on her phone too doing something right. while we're trying to watch TV.
Right.
Like, that. Now that's generational right there. But yeah, so balancing it was always kind of, that tone was always set from the jump.
Right.
Right?
Yeah, yeah. No, and I love how you do that. I know recently, I don't know if it was last week or whatever, you had Hazel out and, mm-hmm. you know, just showing the whole day you spent with her. And again, I without children, I look
took her
at
to the city. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And I love seeing that because it just shows the importance of the relationship with children. And also, again, I think, and again, I hate to say it, and we always talk about these awkward moments in our business. We're about to get into a few, but it's like, that's almost branding, right? Because people are like, oh, they're so cute. Like, prospects could be looking at that and be like, oh, he's a family guy. The
right.
clients love it. Like,
right.
So you know, I know people and I have my nephews on. They're like, oh, your nephews are so cute or whatever. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, yuck it up, you know?
Listen, you share, we talk about sharing your authentic self, especially
yeah.
like I take a lot of joy in doing marketing, and it would be impossible. I would hope it's impossible that if you're going to put yourself out there and want to work in a relationship-based business and a very personal, I mean, it's in the name, personal finance,
right.
and you're not able to share your own life and some of the nice things that are a part of it, I think there's a difference between doing that tactfully and literally putting a sandwich board sign on your child like
right.
with like your Twitter handle or your phone
right.
number like
right.
and using your kid
right.
as a prop. I don't know. People would be like, I guess people could argue it either way, but I choose to wear my life on my sleeve.
Yep.
Truly have no problem sharing.
Yep.
The most intimate of moments you'll never see.
Right.
You know, there obviously is a line between privacy and what's public, but I personally have no objection to putting my life and my family out there. I mean, I've already put it in a book. It's already online. I write about it every week. I think that's what people would be attracted to.
Right.
You know, if they're looking for someone to relate to and trust with their financial life and to get advice from.
Right.
Like, how does the opposite work?
Right.
Like, I know nothing about the guy that I've trusted my entire financial life with.
Right.
I met his wife once.
Right. Yeah.
Oh, he has kids? I have kids. Why didn't they get together for a barbecue or something?
Yeah.
So how is, you know, that's normal to me.
Right.
You know, putting up a wall between your personal and professional life, at least in this business,
mm-hmm.
I don't see how that's really productive.
Wow.
All right. So that's a good place to end and a good place to pivot here. I think let's talk about the state of the industry. There's so much that we could cover and why I love this. And I think this where the rubber is going to meet the road in this podcast is that we don't agree on a lot of things, right? Most things we don't. So I think this is about to get really fun. But before we do that, I for whatever reason, those that know my story and those that don't will, you know, soon. But for whatever reason, when I've, you know, coming into this new life, I have this tremendous clairvoyance to not lose a moment and look at things at time. And before we get into this conversation, I don't want to lose this moment, is that we are sitting close to Wall Street,
yeah.
which was literally built by slaves. Slaves were turned around and sold as the first commodities on Wall Street. And we are in a city where at one point there were signs that said blacks, Jews, and Irish are not welcome here. And now, you know, 400 something years later, you have a black man
yep.
sitting talking to a Jewish man close to Wall Street.
Around the corner.
It is unreal, this moment. So I don't want to lose that. This is extremely powerful where we're about to go. So that's the hard left, right? Grab your old shit bar. Here we go.
Yeah, yeah.
No, but so I definitely want to start there and talking about the state of the industry, and we talk about this a lot, diversity and inclusion, that whole thing. Obviously, we know, yeah, as we talk about this now, there's this climate now of this event that happened in our business. Okay. We talk about this personally. So let's do this. And again, we've had conversations about this, and we pull no punches, and I don't want to hear. We won't name any names or anything like that, but yeah, we will get in the weeds a little bit. Let's start right away with talking about the piece that you put out, right? It was received well. I spoke about it. I thought, you know,
behind I can't save you.
Yeah. I put behind the scenes, I told you, I was like, I just think that a lot of white men and then just folks in general were like, woof.
Yeah.
I'm glad he said that. Right. Like,
you're welcome, white dudes.
Right. Because again, it's like, I don't want to, you know, FaceTime you and then you got on like a Black Lives Matter shirt and you like, yeah, Tyrone, I want to go. It's like, that's not your place,
yeah,
right? It's like, I want your support.
I would feel really weird personally doing that. Like,
right.
And you know, I have your back and all of that.
But it's out of character. Right. So talk about that. What compelled you to write that? Because people were throwing stuff out and everyone's taking a moment to kind of grab their,
Yeah.
Everyone's kneeling moment. But let's talk about that.
So, you know, what happened, and it sent a shockwave throughout. And, you know, we have leadership roles in the industry, profession, whatever you want to call it. And I, first thing I did is I remember talking to my wife about it, who, as a woman in corporate America, has had her fair share,
yep,
of trials and tribulations, as many have.
Right.
And I started to talk with her about, you know, what was happening and picking her brain as to what her thoughts were. And from the very beginning, there was something about it all that either I didn't understand or didn't rub me the right way. And it wasn't so much the issue of what was happening. I think like the way it was being disseminated and everyone was scrambling to, you know, react to it. And right, I'm like, how can everyone be jumping on something to say when, you know, I consider myself a fairly smart person, a fairly tolerant person.
Right.
And I am absolutely struggling to say anything.
Right.
Wow, people are what, either so much further along in knowing thyself than I was? And I said, no, something's amiss here. So I took a step back and just took a breath to have more conversations around it with people around me, yourself included. And I told Heather, I want to write about it. And she was like, don't do that. she's like, you will not spend the amount of time necessary to put a thoughtful piece out there. Your weekly blog is a little more quick and like, let's get something to write about. And I understood her point. I promised her that I would put in the time, and I needed her help with it.
Yeah.
I really did. So in basically speaking with her over several weeks, I was able to get enough of an understanding to pretty much explain that I'll never really understand.
Right.
And that now, having written it months or weeks ago, you know, I can concisely say that it's about making space. Like, for me, it's just there are people going through stuff, whether it's because they're a woman, a minority, a person of color, whatever it may be. And if you are not of them, right, you can intellectually understand as much as you want, but to emotionally understand, Tyrone, I'll never emotionally understand any number of stories you've shared with me.
Right.
Like, I can be compassionate. I can be empathetic.
Right.
I can give to your cause.
Right.
My heart will never get in sync with yours in terms of the feelings that run through your body.
Right.
With those things. But having said that, I can make sure that I can stand on the sideline and support you in what you're doing
yep.
in any way,
yep.
shape, or form.
Right.
As a matter of fact, I'm going to ask you this, you know, in a manner of speaking, I would ask you or anyone to never feel like you can't approach your friend and say, here's where I need help.
Right.
Come join me to a school. My foundation needs your support this holiday season.
That's going to happen.
Write the check. I'll
yep.
go to the school.
Yeah.
Whatever it may be.
Right.
That's how you do it.
Yeah.
You know, yep. and you don't need to tweet about it. You don't need to do anything, but make that space.
Right.
And that's the biggest lesson I learned from that. And I still will never get on the same emotional page with you or anyone who's grieving from something that's happened to them.
Right.
I don't think it's my role, but I can support.
Right.
And I can make that space, and I can lean on you to tell me, how can I help?
Right.
And it sounds real simple, but it's not, because people in that moment, right, have to very quickly assess their own feelings and hopefully catch themselves before they react.
Right.
And I think that's where it's at. So very, very fortunate in that moment, because I'm not the most patient person on the planet. You know, it probably comes from marrying an insurance attorney who's right. like, oh, anything I say, you right. know, she'll, you know, there are certain subject areas that I know that are, you know, need to go through my counsel.
Right.
You know?
Right.
And I knew that from the jump, that was one of them. So I didn't fire anything off, and I actually took the time to explore how I truly felt about it.
Right. Now, let me ask you this, and you're my friend, so I'm going to ask you, and I'm going to be straight up, do you think that white men are under attack right now in our business?
No.
You don't?
Not in any way, shape, or
not
form.
Not in any shape or form. You don't? Or what about men in general? Do you feel like there's this, like, lynching of men going on?
No.
You don't?
No. And to play devil's advocate, I don't know I'm exposed to enough, you know, bad things or
right.
Negative or adverse type situations.
Right.
So I think there's a tremendous amount of bias in my answer.
Yeah.
You know, whether I avoid those, whether
yeah.
I'm in
you're supposed to say
the
that.
North, yeah, whether I avoid them or I'm in the Northeast and sheltered from it, or the specific community that I've chosen to live in
right.
provides me with that shelter.
But you feel like you have enough space to say what you want to say and express yourself without, right, the pitchforks coming for you.
I'll say this. I mean, I think a lot of the stuff that I've seen by virtue of marrying a strong woman who will always fight for herself, some of the stuff I've seen, particularly from men, is extraordinarily disappointing. I think I'll go, you know, take the feminist approach and be right. like, half the time, I have, not to pull the whole, I have two daughters, but I do. And like, I'm glad I do. We don't need more guys. I mean, that's like, people can be like, oh my God, he said that. But,
right.
You know, sometimes I feel like, you know, we don't necessarily do a good job
right.
of recognizing that the construct is changing right before our eyes.
Right.
And that we can actually help equalize that and make that a little bit better for everyone.
Right.
Right? I mean,
right.
How much more time are we going to spend, you know, steering the ship throughout all of history?
Right.
Right? And that kind of gets into the bigger conversation about, are things really changing and how quickly are they changing?
Right.
Whether it be in the profession or society.
Right. So real quick, before we get off that, tell everybody really quickly why pumpkin pie sucks.
So pumpkin pie is probably the greatest pie to ever be created. Honestly, here's the thing. Let's get into this for just one quick second.
Absolutely, we have to. Because honestly, I think one of the things that I saw on Twitter that bothered me about that is like, oh, it's a regional thing. It's not regional. This divides us along racial lines. Let's just talk about it.
Okay, pumpkin pie is the second most celebrated pie in America behind apple pie.
Okay.
Okay, so your sweet potato pie doesn't even come up on any surveys as any beloved pie in the country.
Just lost all your black followers.
Bye.
And your one black friend.
It's okay. Sweet potato pie has 9 times more sugar than pumpkin pie.
Okay.
So it's arguably not good for you.
Okay.
And then here you are.
So you're eating pie here, for nutritional benefits.
Pumpkin pie, literally, I believe, is a superfood. Next to acai. And,
goodness.
And blueberries.
It's okay. It's listen. Just to put a
knot. I mean, you're out here promoting a pie that
do not
doesn't
bring
even show up you, on anyone's
I'm
like,
going
register.
To bring you a slice of my mother's sweet potato pie and I'm going to change your mind. I guarantee you Mama Ross's sweet potato pie will change your mind.
To quote my friend Tyrone, inedible.
Inedible. Oh man, that was a fun thread on Twitter. That was a fun thread.
Truth be told, my great aunt, my grandma's sister, Aunt B.
Aunt B.
Passed,
shout to Aunt B.
She was the first person I would lose in my family, and I haven't had too much experience with loss, but mm-hmm. Aunt B succumbed to cancer when I was young, when I was a young boy. And she was down in South Florida, never married, sweetest woman you've ever met in your life. I mean, my only memories of her are sweetest woman you've ever met,
right.
wants to be with her great nephews,
right.
and I was born on Halloween, so every year I'd get a pumpkin pie made from scratch from Aunt B.
Right.
So for me, as much as I do love pumpkin pie, I never thought I'd actually get to this story. There's actually like a real story related to pumpkin pie.
That's fair.
And who knows my view of it if that wasn't there. So I was eating that from a young age from someone who would bake me my own pie. And because of that, I'm a fiend for pumpkin pie.
All right, fair enough.
Nothing really against sweet potato pie.
All right, that's fair enough.
Except I probably should eat it.
Yeah, okay. All right, fair enough. So staying on some things, again, in the state of the industry that we argue about and I think are... will be good fodder for this. Let's talk about the CFP thing.
Okay.
I feel as though, right, and we've had this argument.
What's wrong with the CFP?
Nothing's wrong with CFP. I think that when the first thing people should do when they go to look for a financial advisor is to look for CFP.
I agree.
I think CFP should be the standard,
okay,
right? And I think anyone outside of that will have to have some type of specialization or whatever,
okay,
and be teamed with a CFP in some capacity moving forward, right, especially as our business evolves.
Yeah.
And I know we've had some back and forth on that where you were, you know, again, as a CFP,
yeah,
right, and CFPs have shot back at me and was like, well, that's not fair, or they're really good
not
financial advisors.
Not fair to
non-CFPs?
Sticking up for their non-CFP friends.
Which is fantastic. But I think a CFP should be the standard, right? If you are really going to say, I do planning.
Yeah.
Right? Some of us, right, use software and all that
stuff.
But I really feel like that should be the standard moving forward. What say you?
Yeah, listen, I have a leadership role with the CFP board. I'm the CFP board ambassador for New York. So I serve as a liaison between the media and the CFP board as to why when consumers or individuals work with financial professionals, they should choose to work with a certified financial planner. So I'm marching that march every day. So I agree that if you're looking for the gold standard in working with a financial professional who holds himself out as a financial planner or advisor, you look for those marks.
Right. And for no other reason, right, for the people out there that may not know why, right, the code of ethics.
Yeah, so right? there's a number of things.
And not to get too down a rabbit hole.
Yeah, there's a code of ethics. It makes you a fiduciary. These are all the words that you want to hear and throw out there.
Fiduciary simply meaning that you have to put the interest of the client first, right, for those of you that are watching this.
Big part of the code there is that everything you do is going to put the interests of your client and the people you serve ahead of your own. You're not going to enrich yourself ahead of your clients. Your goal is to help them.
Right,
which is wonderful, and how can you knock that?
Yep,
right.
Yep. Yep.
For me, though, there is a body of academic knowledge that you learn, and yes, you can learn this literally going to Google.
Right.
But this is the curriculum. This is the knowledge base in which I would think someone should have in order to be able to sit down with clients and effectively plan out their financial lives and make recommendations that are in their best interest.
Right.
It's a framework. It's science, right? It's just engineered for personal finance. And what's so dynamic about the field we're in is you have to juggle quantitative and qualitative properties of people's lives and put forth a product that says, here's how we're going to navigate this.
Right.
Right? So the CFP gives you that knowledge base to crunch the numbers, understand the illustrations, build out the framework for you then to get to that human level.
Right.
Like, okay, I can see how everything's situated here. Now let me find out what you really want, what you're really about. Okay, now that I know that, know what the goals are, and I have a quantitative framework for taking all of that information, I can mash these two things together and actually have really productive conversations that are led by actual academics.
Right.
So that's why I think it's really important that when people are then looking for someone to help them with this kind of comprehensive approach to personal finance, they know that those letters mean that they have acquired or digested that academic knowledge. Yes, adhere to a code of ethics as well, but you need to know what you're doing.
Right.
You're going to literally help people plan out multiple decades of their lives from a financial perspective. There's a lot of lessons, you know, and if the CFA, a chartered financial analyst, is about depth, the CFP, and two completely different designations, the CFP is more about breadth. Like, we have to have such wide view of so many components of people's lives that, again, this academic understanding is really going to help someone like myself or anyone who wants to help someone financially. It's going to give you that base of knowledge to do that.
So 10 years from now or at some point in the future, do you think every financial advisor that's practicing is a CFP? Do you think that day comes?
No.
Really?
No, I think you can continue to make the move forward into getting the vast majority of professionals to become CFPs. You know, right. 10 years from now?
10 years.
Probably not. I mean, that's a big ask to get, you know, everyone who's putting forth financial plans or financial advice to have a CFP designation. I mean, we have many colleagues that are absolutely phenomenal. Here I am sticking up for the ones who don't have it.
Right.
But they, you know, if they're running a firm, they have CFPs in-house.
Right?
So they have access to that knowledge, mm-hmm. right? And I'm also not going to pretend that if you've been helping people plan financially for 20, 30 years in the right way,
right.
that you can't that experience plus, you know, the experience you've gained through doing this over a very long career,
right,
can't rival or equal that of, you know, a CFP who's been at it for, you know, 5 or 10, or even a CFP with lots of experience.
Right. So when we were at Wealthstack, we did something that was called Defend Your Tweet.
Yeah.
Right. So I'm going to turn the tables on you, and I want you to defend the statement that we argue about.
Yeah.
Which is the earn the right to invest. Mm. I vehemently disagree with that.
Yeah, we've gotten. We don't even talk about it.
We let it go.
Yeah.
But talk about that again. You're the CFP.
Yeah.
And I put this out in the argument right away. So yeah. Whatever. You win by default.
Yeah.
But why should people earn the right to invest?
So earning the right to invest is a tagline or expression, if you will, that really is about getting a financial foundation built around yourself so you can operate your life, you know, your financial right. life before you need to think about things like putting risk on your money.
Okay.
Before you would take risks that stretch beyond the ones that are in your control. Mm-hmm. Like earning the right to invest, which is essentially mastering cash flow, mm-hmm. taking care of short-term goals first, building up cash reserves, and knowing what your goals are, a system for your goals. Right. Like stop right there. We joke that that's like 70% of financial planning, cash management, knowing what your goals are, and being able to save consistently.
Yep.
And I feel very strongly that if we can't give people the foundations and key tenets of personal finance, they are going to reduce the probability of being effective when they start getting into investing or right. other areas. So that's what it means to me. Here are the things I would like anyone to have down in order to limit the chances that they like blow themselves up.
Right.
And where you and I have diverged on that is I have created that very much in the context of the people I serve.
Right.
So it is no secret that I cater to older, very successful, high-earning millennials.
Got it.
It also goes to the fact that those people I serve have accumulated a ton of debt from school
right.
and student loans. And I was noticing that people, even regardless of the demographic that I serve, everyone seemed to be in a hurry to like get money in the market. Mm-hmm. And again, we diverge here. Mm-hmm. But to get money in the market and make decisions around their money, much like people were eager to make decisions around taking out student loan debt to go get an education because they were told, hey, you know, if you do this, you'll be okay. Mm-hmm. Okay, that all blew up in 2008, 2009 as jobs went away. And now you had bag holders that were students told to, hey, if you study hard and, you know, take out the debt, you'll be fine. That's Heather's story, going to law school, taking out $250,000 in student loan debt, being told that, yeah, that's what you should do because you'll get an amazing job that pays $160,000 a year. Even if you don't like being a lawyer, you'll pay that off in 5 years and you'll move on.
Right.
It was deemed to be a good deal. None of that was actually based in the fundamentals of personal finance.
Right.
Not one lick of it was based in, well, how much will I owe every month when I graduate? What's the probability I really will land one of those jobs? How good of a student am I going to be to graduate in the top of my class to get that job?
Right.
Is this really worth it? What else could I be doing instead of taking out $250,000 and making a huge bet on myself? So from that perspective, right, from that view, I took it further. Like, what if we gave people the information that they need to avoid situations like that? And the only way, and this is where we will agree, was through financial literacy and education.
Yep.
Okay?
Yep.
And you and I will agree that it's before high school.
Yeah.
Like, you can tell your two-year-old and three-year-old yep. why mommy and daddy go to work.
Yep.
So we can have fun on the weekends and do cool stuff.
Yep.
AKA make money and provide.
Right.
Like foundational lesson at two. Say that 30 times over every day for a month, your kid will understand why you're dropping them off at daycare or with a nanny or any care provider with grandma or grandpa and why you're gone missing for 8 hours.
Right.
They will stop asking you that because they'll know when they see you how much more they're going to appreciate that you're there and why you weren't there before.
Right.
So now I'll speak for you a little bit here because
we've had this conversation
a lot of times. And for you, I think it rubs you wrong in that by putting money in the market or investing is the opportunity to get out of many situations.
Yep.
Like to be able to participate mm-hmm. is key.
Mm-hmm.
And while I think access is wonderful, I think we have more access than ever before.
100%.
We've spent a lot of time talking about this
with financial technology and the fact that
anyone can pretty much bank now.
Yeah.
With a mobile phone, you can bank.
Yep.
Right? You love Cash App,
yep.
Venmo can do it. You have all these ways to participate in the economy, into the financial system now, right? And I think that's fantastic. But I don't think that comes ahead of building a foundation and getting to the point where, okay, like now you're ready to invest. Everyone wants to put the eighth wonder of the world, compounding interest, right, ahead of, you know, the fact that people probably want to sleep well at night more than they want to get that 1 year of, you know, 5% compounded interest or whatever they earn.
Right.
That's just me.
That's fair.
That's just me. I do not hold compound interest above foundational personal finance concepts.
Solid, man. That's my argument. No, it's solid. It's solid. Like I said, I don't want to waste time going back and forth, but we come from very different
views of that.
Yep.
And where we've bumped heads was kind of like, well, that's very easy for you to say. And I will admit, it's a hell of a lot easier for me to say that.
Yeah, of course.
Based on my experiences than you.
Yeah, of course.
Based on your experiences.
Yeah.
So that's where I think ultimately.
And which is going back to just to tie this up, because I definitely want to get a tech thing into the tech, as you mentioned, is that's true diversity, right? Beyond our skin color is diversity of experience. Right? Because you could be sitting with a black man that grew up in affluence and privilege.
Yeah.
And he's like, I agree.
Yeah.
Right? But now you're sitting with me and my background. We couldn't be any more different in terms of people and anything, our experiences in life. So when
that's the irony here. Again, this practice doesn't cater to, you know, affluent young or older millennial whites.
Right.
It's
everybody. Yeah.
You are. Well, you know, first of all, anyone's welcome to get help if they need it.
Right.
You know, we make that available. But, you know, for who we're looking to work with or who typically comes to work with us, it's dependent on really one thing, you know, needing help.
Right.
And then second to that is that sparkle in your eye. That trajectory I'm looking for, the desire to achieve great things in life, people who are willing to invest in themselves and make those goals happen. That's what I want to see. I'll invest in that. I don't care if you pay me a fee, you're 1, 2, 3, 4, or have a dollar to invest.
Right.
If I see that and I know you're not joking around with what your ambition is, I'll help you get there.
Right.
It will pay both of us dividends.
Does AUM die?
Slowly.
Slowly.
Very slowly.
Shout out to Rick Ferry. Rick Ferry's the OG. Y'all show Rick Ferry some respect. Put some respect on that man's name. Shout to you, Rick. I got your back.
You're going to cut that part, right?
No, that's staying in. Right. Shout to Rick. They're shooting shots at Rick. Show Rick some respect. He earned the right to, you know, throw shots. We're off that. So let's get into tech, right? I want to get into that because, again, we can get into social media and that whole thing. But let's talk about that. Just the tech landscape, again, fees going to zero, financial planning.
Sure.
Right? You know, Vanguard is after that whole thing. Like, let's talk about the role in that tech plays in your practice, right?
Yeah.
And you also have a presence on social media and in television. So
you know, you do a lot in that realm. So talk a little bit about that and the change in landscape now. Like, what are your thoughts there, your immediate feelings when
yeah,
it comes
so
up?
Yeah, so I think they serve as complements to advisors' practices. It's maybe getting cliche to say, like, what separates me is, you know, we're tech-enabled.
Right.
But, again, you have to look at the average practice being, you know, a late 50 to mid 60 something year old, you know, dude who probably, you know, pales in comparison from a, you know, able to use technology. I'm very much stereotyping here. I mean, you know, if you talk to my dad who's 71, he'll, right. you know, again, grandpa was using computers, dad was like, he's good. He'll,
right.
he'll install RAM in his PC.
Right?
Like, dad, you did that. You know,
right.
He's not afraid, but typically most people shy, older generation shy from technology, they didn't grow up with it. So
right.
If you're a young advisor and you're, you know, infusing your practice with technology, it's going to serve you very well.
Right.
Not just from how you run your practice operationally or administratively, but how you build the client experience. So, you know, we live and die by it here. It makes
okay.
life easy for our clients, whether they're signing forms, whether
DocuSign
they're yeah, DocuSign, whether they're reaching out to us, whether they're logging into their accounts.
Okay.
Virtually, if you can add an effective piece of technology to any area of the client process or the processes of your business, you can run a leaner business, a more
right.
efficient business,
yep.
A more profitable business. So,
okay.
You know, like, yes, please, like, find ways to make that happen. At the same time, it's commoditizing a lot of things.
Mm-hmm.
The biggest one is the asset management space. You won't have me argue that investment management isn't becoming or hasn't already become significantly commoditized. I mean, I wrote a post, Three Ways to Invest, right? Like, let's stop pretending. Like,
right.
it's, you can do it on your own, you could hybrid it, robo-advisor, or you can pay an advisor to do it on your behalf. And quite frankly, what I'm about is, where do you find value as the end user, right? Because in my experience, the clients that I work with do not have the time. They hardly have time for themselves and their kids. And when they do get a moment of free time, they don't want to spend it, you know, rebalancing their account, even if it's one click. They don't want to get it wrong. They don't want to log in. They don't want to think about it. They
yeah.
just want to put money in it, know it's handled, tied to something greater like a plan, and move on. And the value for that is obviously subjective to them, but whether it's 1%, 75 basis points, a financial planning fee, flat fee, whatever it is, you match value,
right.
okay, to a cost. And you try and put as much parameters around that as possible so it's fair and you have something that you can market.
Right.
And something that you can sell, for lack of a better word.
Right.
And that's how you make a business.
Right.
All right. So technology is making it harder for a lot of people to transition, you know, their practices and what is a landscape that has changed significantly
right.
from what it was just 10 or 15 years
Do you think
ago.
There's too much, right, as far as an advisor's tech stack? Like, there's just so much. Like, I was at the Benzinga FinTech Awards,
yeah.
and I'm like, there's a million things here.
Yeah, there's
You can just go
yeah.
crazy with it.
That's okay. You know, like,
right.
I think it's okay. I think there is way too much.
Right.
It will consolidate.
Right.
It always does. You know, what happens? It consolidates, then it breaks up again. You
right.
know, like if you remember the Bell companies, right?
Right?
Like, telephone was like that. Technology inherently has a long history. All right, corporations have inherently a long history of being consolidated and broken up and consolidated. I mean, geez, finance is like,
right.
you know, the poster child for this, right?
right.
Like
right.
it's the most incestuous, one of the most incestuous businesses out there.
Right.
But nonetheless, I think there's too much, but I think that's good. A marketplace that offers a variety of tools for you to see. I mean, I've adopted technologies that have gone out of business a few years later. Like,
right.
We had a file server, you know, an encrypted file server that instead of putting it on someone else's cloud, it was your own cloud.
Oh, wow.
Like you plugged it into a device, the hard drive sat someplace safe. You had a second version of it at another house or another office to be redundant. It was the coolest thing. Get an email, our Kickstarter has run out of funding.
Right. oh, my God.
Yeah, yeah, we're like, oh, there goes our file server. You know, you
right.
have 3 months to, and let me, you know, you find a new solution. So, yeah, it's pretty crazy. But I think a lot of people are struggling to find what works for them, maybe overwhelmed by it. But I think more importantly, are struggling to adapt to the areas that are becoming commoditized and shift their value proposition to the things that don't become commoditized, advice and planning.
Right. We just pause in the conversation. Check out Altruist Financial Advisors if you're out there. It's obligatory. Do it. You knew it was coming. So do you want to argue about a Bitcoin ETF or no? Can we move on?
We can talk about Bitcoin ETF.
I'm kidding. I'm off that. Okay. I'm off that. We already know how it is. So getting, just tying up that point, and again, I'm loving the fact that we're coming to the end because I can't wait to ask you this question and really get into that. But if you look at our business 5 years from now, right? And again, from voice coming in, we have conversations about crypto, that whole thing, Bitcoin ETF, whatever happens there. Is there anything that you look at now as has been a challenge for you where you're like, all right, I got to prepare for this because I see it coming? Or you're kind of like, I'm a CFP, it's always going to come back to the human touch and planning. There's really no tech that moves the needle for me.
Yeah.
Are you kind of like, I can float this for the next 5 years, 5-10 years, I'm good.
Yeah, I think my biggest challenge is going to be one that, again, I think it's kind of a privilege to be in a position to have this kind of challenge, but it's what do I want to do with what I've built? Yeah. I think I'm going to face some real serious questions as to which direction I go. And that's not a nod to like I'm leaving. I love what I do. Right. I love serving the clients that I have. But to be blunt, is it scaling, bringing in advisors, right? And I've been pretty clear with you and our friends about like where I'm going with this, but not enough to where like it's still not in the back, you know, still in the back of my mind. I think I'm going to be faced with a big decision and we'll see. I don't need, and what I've learned is I don't need to answer that right now. I have a tremendous amount of capacity to grow everything that I currently have. Like if my back was against the wall, like I need to make a decision because I'm constrained with time and I'm constrained with, you know, energy right now. Like, do I hire someone or I say, you know, that's also a great position to be in. Like you've grown to the point where, you know, you can't grow anymore without hiring. Not there yet. I don't need to make that decision.
Fee compression, none of that. Like you don't, none
of that. Not particularly. Again, you know, very fortunate to have thought long and hard. And this is what I was doing. What you need to understand is what plagued me since moving to New York City in 2008 was having to answer the question, how am I going to grow a practice, a business on my own?
Right.
Knowing that I did not want to do what everybody else was doing, that I wanted to do it organically, whether that was because I saw my father do it or because I wanted something that was unique to me, that represented who I was. And that was a big thing. It needed to be my own.
Right.
And no disrespect to older generations or your typical client with assets, typically older, I just did not understand how it was a good marketing plan to go after 65 and up when I was 25.
Right.
Like, how does that make sense? And at the same time, deal with the fact that you're 25.
Right.
Who do you know? What do you know? Right. It didn't matter that I had 6 years of experience and a CFP and licensed and grew up in a practice. It literally meant nothing. So deep inside me, for anyone who was like, oh, this, you know, he had an easy time getting in. His father gave him clients. Well, not only is that not true, but I started from zero and did this brick by brick like everyone else. And I cannot tell you how difficult it is. I still think it's impossible half the time for young advisors that are coming in, which is why I will take any young advisor's phone call and give them 30 minutes of my time if they are truly lost. It's why I did the Career Lab videos. It's why I make myself available.
Which are fantastic, by
the
way. They are really, really good.
It's been a
while. Check that out on YouTube. Yeah, Career Lab on YouTube is phenomenal.
It's hard. You're 25 and you're trying to go into, and here's a knock on the AUM model. If you are 20-something years old and told like you need to raise assets to survive, you know how strongly I feel about this raise 10 million in 2 years recruitment model that just doesn't work. It is a disservice to the financial services industry or the financial planning profession.
Yeah, I went through it. Yeah, absolutely.
It is a disservice to people who want to help individuals. Technology is going to help with that tremendously. CFP designation helps with that tremendously. The content you're making, the content we make, the community that we're fostering, okay, to end the loneliness that I experienced for pretty much a decade of my career, all has been somewhat solved through social media, through what we're doing here today. And that's really a glorious thing. Doesn't change the fact that despite those advantages being here today, despite the advantages that I had in growing up in the business, it is hard AF to become a successful young advisor. And we mentor very similar people, if not the same people in that approach. And they have a smile on their face. Thank God they're going to need that.
Right.
but right. it's a long journey to get there. Anyways, that's my spiel on like what I think the greatest challenge. So looking back at that, knowing that I came from that, you asked me what my greatest, I think I've been living my greatest challenge in this industry for 15 years.
Right.
It's me and Marie, right? And Heather, you know, my wife, having to listen to it all and help me with all of it. It's been very lonely, but yeah, there are a lot of times you want to bail.
Right.
I can count three or four distinctive times early on where I was like, well, if this doesn't work out, what am I going to do next?
Right.
Now, granted, past that, but yeah, man, yeah. This is the most fun I've ever had.
Awesome.
Doing what I do.
That's great. So here we go. The beauty of this is that, and it's just, again, not losing the moment. I remember when I was sitting at Merrill Lynch as a frustrated wirehouse advisor, and I wanted to work with younger clients.
Yeah.
And I see this guy, Douglas Bonaparte, building this millennial brand, and I'm like, look at this guy, frustrated and jealous, right? We connect on LinkedIn. There was really no DMs or anything like that. I didn't know you from a can of paint,
yeah.
Right?
You look familiar.
Right. and it's so funny, right? Now, you know, fast forward, not only I'm interviewing now, but we're friends. It's crazy.
Yeah.
But to that point, like, you actually motivated me. I was like, I got to get out of here, right? And that's something that I can do. And the first thing that I did, I remember, shout to Patrick, if he's out there, he's still at Merrill, PMAC. And I had a conversation when we went for breakfast, and I'm like, I want to go after younger clients. I want to go after startups, that whole thing.
Yeah.
And literally, you know, the rest is history. And now we've built this friendship. We've had some in-depth conversations, again, just really deep and personal in our struggles and things that we think about and just about life in general. And I can honestly say I have no idea what you're going to go with this answer, but and knowing about you, what I know, but what in your life, when you sit and look at it, what is the one thing that has never worked out for you and you're grateful for that it never happened?
That for all the times I interviewed for a job while I was building what I have before me today, that no one gave me a job offer.
Right.
That no one offered me a job. It, to me, at least, you know, I'll answer this from a professional standpoint. I'll try and think about it from a personal standpoint.
Professionally speaking,
that when I did want to give up,
right.
When I thought I was going to give up, I was literally being cosmically told no.
Right.
And I think looking back at it, it's easy for me to say that in the moment. Like, all right, well, you know, City Private Bank doesn't want me to work here, despite, you know, having some great contacts. Like, I thought my resume looked great. I can't so much as get a call back.
Right.
Well, I guess I'll just keep. I had no choice but to keep doing what I was doing. Mm-hmm. And knowing that failure wasn't an option. Like, it was never like, oh, I'll go home. It's like, okay, like, I'm going to get back to the grind, right? And try and make this thing work.
Right.
And yeah, it was a lot of that. And even when things did work out, there was a lot of risk built into the things that were working out.
Right.
You know, and they're being constant. I got some big breaks in my career mm-hmm. that, while helped me move forward, could have, you know, you start building a business around massive opportunities that you've provided yourself. Like, you get that big client in the door, and now they make the impossible possible. Or now you can go pursue that thing you wanted to build, in this case, bona fide wealth, to get the confidence and the financial support. And you did that on your own, right?
Right.
And then you take that next leap.
Mm-hmm.
Scary.
Right.
Right. But again, all the failures that led up to there. So yeah, I'm very grateful.
Dang.
Very grateful no one gave me a shot.
Did it, except
Dad, yeah. Whether it was them or whoever it was at the time.
Right.
Because I was worried about what my fallback plan would be.
Right.
Even through business school. I was like, okay, well, if it doesn't work out, you know, at least I'll have this MBA.
Right.
You know, I could walk into a fancy firm and be like, let me be a private banker.
Right.
You know, and I guess they still would have told me no.
Well, that's good, man.
Does that answer the question?
No, it does. For me, like I said, the genesis of the question is just simply, as you know, it's a healing process for me, right? And wherever people take that. Because when you say, What are you most grateful for? We can think of tons, the lights, the air, I can close myself, feed myself. You go a layer deeper when you say, well, what is it that didn't work out that you're like, thank God it didn't? Because you got to go somewhere else.
Yeah.
Right? You got to go deep. But I want to honor it in the fact that I want people to tell me exactly what comes to mind.
Yeah.
And that it could be that. So I don't think there's a wrong answer, but I just think
I might have spoiled the question because we began with what that stems from, which is right. I'm grateful for it not working out with my father.
Right.
Right? Like, I'm grateful that my family business situation, I'm grateful I'm not still in South Florida. Truthfully, that would have meant I never would have come to New York City.
Right.
Heather and I would have never followed through on our relationship from college.
Right.
We never would have, you know, been burned by student loan debt and completely blow up our financial situation predicated on, you know, a lie.
Right,
you
know? Right.
And we never would have fought as hard as we fought. You know, just being young and broke in New York City.
And in love,
you know.
Love got you through.
Yeah, Grandpa Shep would say, love finds a way. And, yeah. You know, that's very sweet, Grandpa. Love also needs to pay student loans. but again, with the theme throughout our conversation about hearing things your parents or grandparents said to you that you thought were phony back then, they always come back to haunt you. There's usually some basis of truth in it. So yeah, between being told no on jobs and it not working out with my family business and with my father, none of this would have happened.
Right, awesome. Well, we got through this one without arguing or cursing at one another.
So surprising.
This has been a success, man. This has been so awesome. I'm honored and humbled again to sit across from you as your friend and speak to you and learn more about you. And thank you for having us, man. We will see y'all on the next one. Thanks everybody for tuning in. As always, go subscribe, go stream, share it. We appreciate you. See you on the next one.
This was another episode of the Human Advisor Podcast. Visit humanadvisorpodcast.com for new episodes. And be sure to check out altruist.com to learn more about the first ever fully integrated digital brokerage platform for fiduciary financial advisors. No commissions, no fees, and no biases. The way it should be.